which is the talking newspaper for Friday, the 12th of May 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter Roy Faithful, and your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking Newspaper and the Winchester Talking Magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And if there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. The main headlines this week are: Tories take a battering as Lib Dems turn the screw, landmark family shop quitting city, and city mill bid to get wheel turning again. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
Tories take a battering as Lib Dems turn the screw. The Liberal Democrats have increased their majority on Winchester City Council. They increased the number of councillors by 2 to 30, whilst the Conservatives slipped from 13 to 12. Such figures have not been seen since the noughties, when the late Rodney Sabine was the council leader. The Lib Dems now have 2/3 of the 45 seats on the council. The Lib Dems made 2 gains from the Tories in Upper Meon Valley and Bishop's Waltham. The count was held at Winchester Sports and Leisure Park at Bar End on Friday, the day after the election. The extent of the Conservatives' losses has been masked by the fact that 2 of the seats which changed hands were technically independent, but held by councillors who had been members of the Tory group. Whilst the Conservatives took back Denmead, vacated by the independent Judith Clemenson, the victory was diminished because Miss Clemenson had previously been a Conservative. The Green Party has managed to double the number of its members on the council, with Councillor Danny Lee being elected in Central Meon Valley in a seat vacated by the independent former Tory Victoria Weston. Speaking after the election, Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of the Conservative group, said she was disappointed that we didn't gain any more seats on the council, and continued, "The fact that obviously there has been a national overlay of a lot of disappointment for the Conservatives generally, and I think that's had a huge effect here." Councillor Martin Todd told the Chronicle, "It's always encouraging. Whenever you're running a council and you win more seats, you're holding the ones you have and you gain another 2. Obviously, we are delighted that local people have chosen to entrust us with the running of the council for at least another year." The current makeup of Winchester City Council is Lib Dem 30, up 2, Conservatives 12, down 1, Greens 2, up 1, Independent 1, down 2. Turnout ranged from just 32% in Southwark and Wickham and 33% in Denmead to 55% in the keenly contested Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery areas. The election saw the first husband and wife combination on the council in many years. Sudhakar Akwal joins his wife Vivian. Previously, the last married duo with the Craigs, Anne and John, in the 1990s.
Let's have the story behind the second headline, please, Noel.
Yes. Landmark family shop quitting city. One of Winchester's longest-standing independent shops is closing and moving to Italy to be closer to family and relieve the financial burden of Brexit. Former is launching its clearance sale as it prepares to relocate to Tuscany before the end of the summer. The family business, which sells Italian gift and homeware items, opened in Parchment Street in 1999, but the team is ready to move closer to its roots and alleviate money and time-consuming issues caused by Brexit. Co-owner Andrew Butling, 54, who runs the shop with his wife Celeste and parents-in-law Maurizio and Silvia Ponzellini, said, "We're moving for very happy family reasons. Celeste's parents deserve to take it easy and take a step back. The food and weather are better there too. There are mixed emotions because we have a community of friends here, and many of those began as customers. The shop has provided a social circle, an extended family that anyone would be sad to leave behind. We have been very happy and fulfilled here, so leaving under these circumstances is actually quite easy, as we've no regrets. As a family, we decided to live and work together, which comes with compromise. We could have had different jobs with more money, but we wanted to prioritise family, and we're very happy with that. Despite the primary reason for the move being family and allowing his parents-in-law to retire, Mr. Butling said that Brexit had also been a deciding factor. He said, "Brexit was a nightmare for independents. Importing goods from Europe has become much more expensive and difficult. Our unique selling point is our products from abroad, so we have experienced a tremendous increase in our costs. The number of companies that want to work with England has decreased by about 80%, as they also have to do more paperwork. The cost of living has gone up for everyone, but Brits have shot themselves in the foot by removing easy access to products for independent businesses. This has certainly been a deciding factor. As a Remain area, Winchester has been very good about Brexit, and we've had lots of support from our customers, who are loyal, thoughtful and responsible. During the past 20 years, the family has also been petitioning for Parchment Street to become pedestrianised with dual access, like it is across the road by the Hatch and Forter Kitchen. Mr. Buckling said this has been a big failing of the council. If they had found a way to do it, they would have reduced the rat run and created an environment that would have been much more conducive. The tea room could have had outdoor seating. There are enough businesses here that provide a sufficient surface, and the local population would have been delighted. Former is beginning its clearance sale imminently with the family, hoping to sell most of their stock before the move. The closing date is currently unknown, but anticipated to happen by the end of August. The new shop in San Casciano in Val di Pezza near Florence will be named Nuovo Corso, which means new path. The only other change to the businesses will be a greater range of clothing."
Over to you, Margaret, for the third headline story.
City Mill bid to get wheel turning again. Winchester City Mill has launched a campaign to raise £130,000 to replace its water wheel. Milling ground to a halt in January when the wooden wheel was declared no longer fit for purpose. The current water wheel was only installed in 2004, but the major floods in 2014 and several years of extreme weather since have taken their toll, and it now needs replacement. This isn't the first time this building has faced adversity. The current building dates from the 18th century, but milling on site goes back to the Middle Ages. It was rescued from demolition by the National Trust in 1928, and in 2014 the floods put at risk the entire building. Thanks to tremendous support from visitors and the local community, more than £90,000 was raised to help with the total cost of £300,000. With the water wheel currently out of action, the mill's dedicated volunteer millers are giving their time to speak to visitors about the mill and how it would normally operate. Miller Bob Goodwin, "It has been a real privilege to come to the mill every week and make fresh flour in the way millers have done here for centuries. It's a very rare thing, possibly unique, to be producing flour on a site with a history of milling dating back 1,000 years. Visitors find the process fascinating to watch, especially children. They love watching the wheels turning and the flour rushing out of the chute into the bags." Up until January, Winchester City Mill has been milling and selling its own stone ground flour since it reopened its doors to visitors in 2004. Using grain from a nearby farm, Newhouse Farm Partnership, City Mill has been telling a strong field-to-fork story by knowing exactly where their grain is grown, milling the grain into flour on site by a team of extremely talented and committed volunteers, and finally selling the flour to visitors or using it in cakes and bakes in the mill's cafe. Michaela Saunders Hall, visitor operations manager for the mill, said, "We have already had such a wonderful response. I'm confident that together we can raise the money and get City Mill once again. One for one can't wait to get baking. I for one can't wait to get baking again with our stone ground flour." Following a recent visit, MP Steve Bryan said, "Everyone in Winchester will know about the City Mill, but even though we pass it every day, when was the last time you popped in? It's a fantastic place to have in our city, and it's such a shame that the wheel has been out of commission. Next time you're passing, drop in, say hi to the team, and perhaps donate a few pennies or visit the new cafe, which is a great place to meet up. Donations to the fundraising campaign can be made via nationaltrust.org.uk/Winchester City Mill or by visiting the mill in person. Winchester City Mill is open Wednesday to Sunday, telephone number 01962 870057. And there's a picture of Steve Bryan and Claire Skinner standing in front of the wooden wheel.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, letter from Westminster, Belgarum diary, first person, and editorial comment. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Beckett. William Beckett, peacefully aged 91. Kimber, Beryl Esther Kimber of Ropley, aged 88. Miles, Anthony David Miles, aged 84. Tuffill, Joyce Muriel Tuffill, aged 95. And finally, Waite, Anthony Tony Waite of A.S. Waite & Son, peacefully at the Countess Brecknock Hospice Andover, aged 66. And now it's over to Heather for Christian comment.
Moira Redmond has written the Christian comment this week, and it's titled "The Chance to Build a New World." Andrew Lloyd Webber was asked by King Charles III to write an anthem for the coronation, a piece of music that we all heard for the first time last weekend. Lloyd Webber was one of the creators of the biblical musicals Jesus Christ Superstar and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, so he has form in this area. He used Psalm 98 with its appropriate message, "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord the King." I think that is something that King Charles is aware of, Webber said, that he's not the king, the Lord is the king. But Charles III is an earthly king, and we know he has a strong Christian faith himself and wants all faiths to work together and to feel fully represented in modern Britain. Is he looking to the Bible for clues on how to rule? If you read the Gospels, what you find is a very strong message about servant leadership. There is a God of great majesty and power, but his Son came to serve others, to rule with humility. This is, after all, the leader who knelt down to wash the feet of his friends. King Charles undoubtedly will give considerable thought to his duties and obligations as king, including the importance of serving others. He said as part of the ceremony, "I come not to be served, but to serve." The former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, says of the late Queen that anyone, monarchist or not, could see that this was someone with a formidable sense of honour, doing what had to be done. And there are people who fear that the passing of the Queen means the loss of decency and honour in public life. But wouldn't it be marvellous if the coronation gives us a chance to change, to restart and reset our modern world, even to build a new world? King Charles has called on people to volunteer and serve others, and no one can doubt his commitment to a more equal and more caring society, one where we look out for each other and care for our environment. St. Paul, writing to the Galatians, makes a wonderful list in 5:22 of the good things faith can bring to your life. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Just reading that list can make you feel better, more at peace with the world. And it's a list we can all use as a starting point as we try to think of ways to improve our lives, ourselves, and the world around us. Imagine if we all had just 10% more of all these features. It's spring. We're having a month with an extra holiday in it. We are celebrating the reign of a new king. There's a lot to shout about, and the Psalms tell us how to do it. This is a verse from Psalm 98, the one that Andrew Lloyd Webber used. Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Burst into jubilant song with music. Make music to the Lord with the harp and the sound of singing, with trumpets and the blast of the ram's horn. Shout for joy before the Lord the King.
And we'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now, there are 9 letters this week, and Noel will start.
Yes, Una Stevens writes a letter called The Coronation Bill, which is a slightly alternative view of the coronation. If King Charles III was serious about his professed desire, uttered during his coronation, to serve rather than be served, he could have orchestrated a very low-key coronation ceremony. Consequently, he could have donated the multi-million pounds bill for this fandango to his people, who have had to cough up. They have to make acutely worrying decisions about the balance of feeding their families or heating their homes in a vain attempt to cope with the cost of living crisis. I am a pensioner, yet I continue to work extremely hard for young people in my care, advancing their education to a level that has been recognised by many. As a result, I continue to pay taxes despite my advanced age. I would far prefer seeing my contributions used for good purposes, rather than meaningless, outmoded pageantry, during which the king was annoyed that he was kept waiting. Objectors to the monarchy were handcuffed and swept away, in accordance with the laws that this government, led by Rishi Sunak, has failed to have ratified by the upper chamber. So much for freedom of speech in Great Britain. My only consolation in this sorry, sad saga is that neither Charles nor Camilla looked very happy as they stood alone on the balcony of Buckingham Palace, having finally achieved their life's desire at great cost to many. In addition, it was clearly evident that Queen Camilla fidgeted with her crown when Archbishop Welby placed it on her head. It is possible that it did not sit well. Could it have been destined for a very different queen? Eunice Stevens, Cliff Way, Compton, Winchester.
Oh, this is a letter from Simon Lever. Charlotte is truly awesome. I was moved to read about Charlotte Smee's terrible suffering with brain cancer and continued side effects, Chronicle May the 4th. Although living through a journey of pain and suffering, she has demonstrated her generosity in promoting brain trust by raising money via her painting. Painting that helps her improve her coordination, such as her selflessness, she supports Brain Trust in helping others through such challenging times. Charlotte Smee is such a wonderful example of humanity at its best. Truly awesome. And that's from Simon Lever of Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Phil Gagg writes, Christopher Sharrett was wrong to take issue in the Chronicle of May the 4th with both your editorial from April the 20th and a letter from Chris Gillam about the harmful impact of traffic on Winchester. Electric cars will not solve our problems. First, They will not solve our traffic problems. They will continue to take up as much space as diesel and petrol cars, and they will still create traffic jams. They are usually heavier and larger than the cars they replace. Motorists will still fill up our streets, making it difficult for people to cycle, threaten pedestrians on narrow pavements, make it unsafe to use mobility scooters, make it difficult to cross the road, and delay our bus services. Second, they will not solve our pollution and health problems. Their brakes and tyres will still emit fine particulates. Their brakes and tyres will still emit fine particulates, PM2.5s, that exacerbate lung problems, are associated with brain damage, and can cause heart problems. Data for the M3 and A34 near Winchester show roadside concentrations of particulates higher than the limits currently being proposed by the government. Within vehicles, concentrations are higher still, and motorways should carry a health warning. Third, they will not solve our climate problems. Electrification of the road fleet will bring some reduction in emissions, but it will be too slow, and it will not reduce emissions enough. Nationally, we will need more than 6 times the quantity of green electricity to meet emission-free growth in demand caused by electrifying our homes and transport at the same time. Inevitably, any rise in demand will be met mostly by burning more gas, and electric cars using gas-generated electricity will continue to have over half the emissions of the petrol and diesel cars they replace. For electric cars to be emission-free, we will need to minimise demand for electricity at the same time as increasing the supply of green electricity, and this will require fewer cars, more active travel, and public transport, and hectares of new solar farms and wind farms, and we must start right now. Paul Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
Andrew Backus writes about kind strangers. I am most grateful to all those kind passers-by who came to my rescue when I collapsed inside the Chandler's Ford station bus shelter on Tuesday afternoon, May the 2nd. My instantaneous fall from grace wedged my body beneath the row of seats from whence many hands extricated me. I spent 24 hours in hospital for various tests and left with no injuries or after effects. The kindness of strangers is all-conquering. Andrew Backus, Painters Field, St Cross, Winchester.
And this is from Anne Pike, Witch Hunt. I was shocked and amazed to read your front page news, read Dr Martin Pittman, who I have known since he was a toddler and who has overseen the care of two of my grandchildren, Chronicle May the 4th. A more decent and honest person you couldn't wish to meet. If he reported his concerns, it would be because he was worried for his patient's safety, which would always be his chief concern. This appears to be a witch hunt. Anne Pike, Broadview Lane, Oliver's Battery.
Pete Cook writes about avoiding an area. Further to my recent letter regarding homelessness, I thought I would share another about my experiences with beggars and the same group of street drinkers around the Silver Hill to Brooks area. Both things have always been an issue in Winchester, but I find in this day and age the problem is totally diabolical. The beggars seem to be very abrupt and abusive if you say sorry no. And as for the drinkers, they feel they can shout and swear as much as they like, litter and become very angry if you can't give them a cigarette or even a light for their cigarette. So we now avoid the area. Most of these people are known to have homes, so why do they feel the need to gather in a busy part of town? Surely by now, as it's been going on for so long, and the same people are known by the police, but the behaviour continues. Totally unacceptable, in my opinion. Pete Cook, Firmstone Road, Winnall, Winchester.
And Mrs. J.E. Davis has a road query. To settle a small debate, can anyone tell me when the junction on the A31 at the new inn Percy Hobbs was altered to a roundabout, or where I might obtain the information? Mrs. J.E. Davis, Baring Close, Itchen Abbas.
A letter from Tim Fell. Concert thrills. Over the long weekend from the 28th of April to 1st of May, music lovers from Winchester and further afield enjoyed a programme of concerts, including works ranging from 17th century Purcell and Bach through Schubert, Beethoven, Mendelssohn and Shostakovich, to two world premieres by Robin Holloway and Hugh Watkins, programmed by artistic director Kate Gould and played by regular members of the festival's ensemble and guest musicians, all taking time off from their international, professional, orchestral and solo commitments. They also managed to fit in a scores performance in which local school children devised and performed their own original songs with the festival's strings quartet, a family concert at the Nutshell, a visit to the Learning Disabilities Group, Winchester Go LD's Funky Lunch at the Arc, another to the residents of St John's Almshouses, and a public masterclass coaching young up-and-coming ensembles. The packed-out concert audiences were thrilled by the many and varied programmes performed in St Paul's Church and the Chapel of St Cross. Tim Fell, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
Councillor Sally Yalden writes to thank the voters who supported her. I would like to express my heartfelt gratitude to those who supported me in the recent borough council elections. I'm sure I also speak for all of those who stood as candidates. I'm looking forward to serving you and making our wonderful communities a better place for all. Equally, there are some inspirational volunteers and parish councillors whose work should not go unnoticed for their dedication and hard work in our communities. It's interesting to note that while the Conservatives maintained overall control of Test Valley Borough Council, the Liberal Democrats won a larger share of your votes. Of the total votes cast, 33,747 were for Liberal Democrat candidates, but only 31,534 were for Conservatives. If we also consider Green, Labour and Independent votes, there are actually 42,053 votes for candidates opposing the Conservatives. So some 57% of those who took the time to vote oppose the Conservatives, yet they still lead and control the council. This is not a balanced representation for voters. We really do need to fix this system by introducing proportional representation, which is already championed in local elections in Scotland and Northern Ireland. It is the most popular form of democracy for general elections in the vast majority of other countries. This would ensure that everyone's voice is represented and all votes count. It also means politicians having to work together for the benefit of everyone. In the meantime, rest assured that I will continue to listen to everyone and endeavour to provide you with a balanced voice as your local councillor. With many thanks again, Councillor Sally Yalden, Fernhill, Brashfield, Borough Councillor for Ampfield and Brashfield.
And that concludes all of the letters to the editor. Thank you to all of the contributors. And now Noel's going to read the letter from Westminster.
Yes, written by Steve Brine, the MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. What an incredibly special week we've had, and once again, I can't help but think being British is like having a kind of superpower. We're so lucky to have the stable and robust constitution we do, and we are very fortunate to have in Charles, as in his late mother, a head of state we can be proud of. Sure, his life is one of privilege, power and wealth, but it's how you use it that really matters. Prince Charles first spoke about the environment and single-use plastics in particular in 1970. Not many were doing that at that time, 4 years before I was born, and he received his fair share of criticism for being rather wacky, but his views have certainly aged well. Equally, the Prince's Trust has helped over 1 million young people since its foundation in 1976, and many from our area have benefited from it. What a legacy that is before he even starts his role as king. The coronation service itself was superb, and my favourite moment remains when the king was derobed, kneeling before God for the anointing. It was almost medieval in its imagery, and for me, extremely moving. I met our future king for the first time only last year when he came to Winchester to unveil the Licorice statue in Jury Street. And it was this we discussed when I was honoured to meet him again last week, just days before his coronation, on a visit with the Queen to Westminster. He remembered his visit to the city fondly. On the eve of the big day, I joined hundreds of guests in Winchester Cathedral from across the county for a very special service to mark the coronation. Our great cathedral has never looked better, and we were treated to an order of service carefully worked up with the echoes of the Edward Confessor's coronation, which took place in Winchester in 1043. By all accounts, we did them rather well before the move to Westminster Abbey by William the Conqueror, so I think the Dean and her team here, who deserve great credit for Friday's service, should put in an early bid for Prince William's coronation. Concluding on kingly matters, and Sunday's sunshine paved the way for some really special street parties across our area. The one I saw in Saxon Road in Hyde epitomised the scene of traditional patriotic England. And the concert at Windsor on Sunday night couldn't have been a better showcase of music and arts in which Britain leads the world, even if, take that, Mark Owen did need a haircut. Nobody is pretending that we don't have challenges in modern Britain, and I understand some want to major on them because it suits a glass-half-empty negative mindset driven by partisan consideration. But ours is a very special country with so much in its favour. And we live in an incredibly beautiful and prosperous part of England that we should neither take for granted or assume it can never be changed by decisions taken locally. Which takes me finally to the local elections, in theory at least, fought on what's best for our local wards and with an outcome that will last 4 years for those elected and those who elected them. Many congratulations to all local councillors returned last week. Some interesting choices were made, and I think it a shame that Winchester again missed the chance to have more diversity on the council. But I will work, as always, with those of all parties and none for the benefit of my constituents. Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford.
Margaret's now going to read an alternative look at the news because she's got Belgarham Diary.
And it's headed, Former MP Just Misses Out. And it's there is a photograph of Mark Oughton at the top of this article, under which it says, Mark Oughton's political career nosedived after a News of the World expose. Former Winchester MP Mark Oughton has narrowly missed out on rekindling his political career. Mr. Oughton was hoping for election for the Lib Dems in the Severn Valley ward in South Gloucestershire, a Conservative-led council where he now lives. However, the two sets in seats in the ward were won by a fellow Lib Dem, Tony Williams, who got 1,537 votes, and Matthew Riddle for the Conservatives, who got 1,528 votes. Mr. Oughton came third, securing 1,435 votes over Tory Keith Birchall's 1,325, Labour's Abigail Curtis's 307, and Labour's Naomi Carroll's 229. He said, I am delighted we won the seat for my colleague and overturned a 750 majority. Frustrating I just missed out, but still got 47% of the vote, which is more than many that won. And I won the seat to my local town council, which I am looking forward to joining. Now looking forward to more tennis and football and gardening. Mr. Oughton left Parliament in 2010 after being found by the News of the World with a male sex worker in 2006. He had been a rising star in the Liberal Democrats. The expose by the News of the World happened during the Lib Dem leadership contest in 2006, in which he was a candidate. He published a book about his experiences in 2009, called Screwing Up.
And it's over to Heather because she's got this week's first person, which is by Kimberly Barber.
And Kimberly writes, no excuse for abuse. I'll set a scene for you. You're in a pub, a nice country pub with a long history, full of locals, and everyone seems happy. Many people have pints, some are eating dinner. It's busy. There are a few staff working, and you can see that the small team is working hard, doing their best to keep the customers happy. The pub is a business. It needs to make money to stay open. But some might argue that it's providing a community service by just being there. In fact, many people in the community support it because they can see its value. You are in there, enjoying your drink, and someone walks in and starts shooting their mouth off. They haven't bought a drink or parted with any cash. They are loud. You can't help but hear their voice. They are saying they don't like the pub. The food and drink is all wrong. It's not being served how they like. They start on the staff next. The young waitress is useless. The barman looks stupid. The barmaid is not wearing nice enough clothes. Apparently, the whole pub is disgusting. It's a disgrace and doing a disservice to the community. Well, what would you think would happen next? Most self-respecting landlords would have stopped the loudmouth after the first insult. They might have been given a warning, but certainly they would not have got as far as our big mouth did before getting booted out. A pub is a business, often at the heart of the community. It's not that far different to our newspaper. Our comment section always allows people to voice their opinions on stories and matters in the community. It's open under most of our stories. We do not monitor what is put out before it's posted. We give an element of trust that our readers are going to follow the basic rules and be kind, courteous, and not say anything defamatory or derogatory. We rely on other readers to flag comments that breach the rules, which sends an alert to our editorial team, and then we jump in and assess the situation, usually removing the comment. Comments can be made 24/7. And sometimes it may take us a bit of time to get to the comment, especially if it's been made at 3 a.m. However, we will always look into any reported as quickly as we feasibly can. Just like when a person walks into a pub, they are allowed to speak. However, if they start spouting offensive rubbish, then usually they are swiftly told to button it or get out. Fundamentally, my newspapers are a business. We run on a small team, doing our best to bring news to our communities, highlighting issues of importance, shining a light on the best bits, and holding power to account. Recently, I ran into a war of words on Facebook when someone who'd been banned from one of my site's comments section accused me of running a Stalin state for banning them. Their original comment, not only borderline offensive to me and my writing, although disguised as being critical, without any element of critical thinking applied, was defamatory against a local business. This was the 9th comment from their account that my team had deleted or removed. These comments ranged from ridiculous to offensive to abusive. The commentator blasted me and my team on social media as if some human right had been violated by his being blocked. Many others chipped in. One even made a nasty comment about my choice of clothes. What I would like to make very clear is that my newspapers are a valuable part of the community, but they're not a free service. Just like the pub, they are a private business. Why should we stand for someone shouting abuse in our place of work? Just because it is digital, placing a comment online is no different to standing at the bar in a busy pub and shouting out your views. If you would not say your views in public, then they are best not written online. And I make no apology for channeling my inner Peggy Mitchell by yelling, "Get out of my pub!" and banning people when they cross the line.
And it's time for editorial comment, and it's read by Noel.
Yes, and it's about the sad departure of an iconic indie shop. The impending closure of Former in Parchment Street, revealed on our front page, is a sad blow to the city. It has been a shop specialising in goods from Italy since it opened in 1999. Now the owners are preparing to shut for good. Andrew Butling, the manager's wife and in-laws, are Italian. So it is no surprise the lure of food and climate of Tuscany is too strong. They plan to open a similar store there called Nuovo Corso, New Path. Mr. Butling has told the Chronicle that the bureaucracy of Brexit has also been a factor encouraging them to go. It is much more difficult for a small business such as Former to easily trade with the Italians, and harder for Italian businesses to deal with shops such as his. There will be much sympathy from his customers, many of whom voted Remain in the 2016 referendum. Winchester was and remains one of the most pro-European places in the UK. Setting Brexit aside, Winchester will miss Former, a family business offering something very different from the high street chains. Let's hope another independent takes over the premises.
Lighting up times. On Friday the 12th of May, it ends at 5:20 a.m. and begins at 8:44 p.m. On Wednesday the 17th of May, it ends at 5:13 a.m. and begins at 8:51 p.m. And now a little note for what's happened locally and to do with this talking newspaper. All listeners, volunteers and friends are invited to attend our annual general meeting, Thursday the 18th of May at 2 p.m. in the Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall, the hallway, Littleton, Winchester, S022 6QL. There will be a talk by Kimberly Barber, Regional Editor, Hampshire and Wiltshire Weekly Titles, Hampshire Chronicle, Romsey Advertiser, Basingstoke Gazette, Andover Advertiser, Salisbury Journal, Forest Journal. Please join us for afternoon tea, and please respond as soon as possible, if you would, please, to jprich@tiscali.co.uk. That's jprich, R-I-C-H, at tiscali.co.uk, or you can phone him on 023 8073 2888. We'll continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Margaret.
New benches for the Watercress Way. 4 new benches have been installed along the Watercress Way footpath near Kingsworthy. The trustees of the Watercress Way were given a grant by Alsford Rotary as part of a legacy from Mike and Bridget Newitt. They were Alsford residents with a strong interest in the natural world. The work was delayed by the pandemic and then the difficulty in obtaining suitable wood. The Trust will erect a plaque on each bench to recognise their donation, as well as a QR code linked to birdsong appropriate to the site. Mike Collis, Watercress Way Secretary, said, "At Worthy Down Hall near Kingsworthy, we have installed a bench with views over the platform. In addition, we have installed a map post for children to have a closer look at anything interesting that they find while their parents gratefully sit on the bench. Our other map post in the Grattan at Sutton Scotney is very popular. In Martyr Worthy, we have installed an additional 2 benches on the straight mile of railway track. There are now 5 benches along this section to allow access for those who find a shorter walk more appropriate. The 2 new ones are at Bridget's Lane Bridge and at the clearing now near Couch Green. This section is part of our focus on access for all, and we have a long-term project to provide a wheelchair ramp to this section from the Couch Green car park. The 4th bench is near the Ale House in Alsford. It enables you to stop a moment and enjoy the sight and sounds of the River Arle. This is a popular walk with local residents, and the Ale House is a very rare building. It is believed there's only one other similar building in the country." And there's a picture of one of these benches on the old railway track, and it really is worth doing that walk.
Charity cyclist shocked by brazen bike thief. A Winchester man was left in shock after his bike, that he was planning to use for a mammoth fundraiser, was stolen in Winchester city centre. Kieran Payne, aged 23, was working at the Open Deli Cafe in Middlebrook Street when the bike was stolen from outside. Police have confirmed that the bike is yet to be found. It was stolen on April the 12th, just 2 days after Mr. Payne had launched his fundraising campaign. The student was going to be cycling for more than 7,000 kilometres to raise money for Cancer Research UK after his mother, Sandy Turnbull, was diagnosed with breast cancer. The 23-year-old said, "I was planning to complete the route on the bike that was stolen. The timing was very frustrating, as I'd launched the fundraiser just 2 days before the theft. Luckily, the bike was insured, so I should be able to sort a replacement in time to continue my training. However, to have the lock cut and the bike taken in the middle of the day, outside a bike cafe and shop, was very frustrating. I was in shock, enough to put anyone off riding into town and locking their bike up, and that's a shame." So far, Mr. Payne has raised £1,774 of his £2,000 target. He will be starting his ride on June the 7th and predicts it should take around 2 months to complete.
Royal Celebration is Rail Station Showcase. Hundreds of people celebrated the coronation at a special event at Alsford Station. Organised by the Watercress Line, the event took place last Sunday to celebrate the coronation of King Charles III, which took place the day before. Starting at 1 p.m. in front of the station, there were scores of activities for young people, including face painting and glitter tattoos, alongside competitions including Best Cake and Best Gazebo. The winners of the Best Dress Gazebo competition, Julia and Jim Stansby and Pauline and Derek Mason, said that the day was really lovely. They continued, "It's a really nice event and we are really enjoying it." Meanwhile, entertainment was provided throughout the afternoon by the Winchester Morris Men, the Alder Valley Brass Band, and 1940s-style singer Stephanie Bell. The event was compared by Paddy Roadknight, who said... The event was compared by Paddy Roadknight, who said, "The people and weather have both turned out really fine. Alsford can celebrate." Guests were also treated to a special appearance by a train decorated specifically for the coronation, which entered the station at 2:30 p.m. Visitors were then invited to join in singing God Save the King. Watercress Line interim CEO Rebecca Daly said, "The biggest thing for us is just getting all these people here and being a real part of Alsford. It's a really seminal moment for the Watercress Line, to join together the town and the line in a way that we haven't seen for a little while." So it's been a completely communal activity with the Alsford Town Council, the Winchester City Council. They've really supported the event. And all the people who came here, it's absolutely delightful day for us to showcase what we can do and make a contribution to our local area. Event manager Stephanie Swan added, "I am very pleased that so many people from the local community have come here. It's really nice to see people coming together. And I suppose that's part of the reason I wanted to organise it. We have probably 500 or so people here, so it's great that everyone wants to share in the coronation." And there's, of course, a picture of the front of the station and literally hundreds of people sitting around looking very cheerful.
School travel fees to soar. Parents will have to pay a lot more towards getting over 16s to school or college next year, as the County Council considers raising the cost by more than a quarter. The post-16 school transport policy could increase the parental contribution by 27.1% if approved by Hampshire County Council's Executive Lead Member for Children's Services, Edward Heron, next week. Transport will typically only be offered if the students have an education, health and care plan, or if the student has a disability, which means they require transport arrangements. Where travel or transport is perceived as a barrier, the policy statement details when and how the council will support attendance in post-16 education. The transport service provides transport for approximately 560 students a day. Due to the above inflation increases in transport over the last year, the council says that the service now costs 27.1% more than last year, a total of £3.7 million a year. The council is therefore suggesting that parental contributions go up by 27.1% for the next academic year. The proposal was subject to public consultation from February the 20th to April 2nd this year. The consultation received 31 responses. One stated they were supportive, 12 said they were opposed, and 18 expressed no direct support or opposition, though all had unfavourable comments.
Big push to promote repair cafe culture. And there's a photograph of about 20 smiling volunteers and a sign which says, "Welcome to the Repair Cafe of North Hampshire. Don't bin it, we'll fix it." Local people are being encouraged to reduce waste and save money by visiting a repair cafe. There are two in Winchester and others dotted around Hampshire. With the Big Fix campaign running throughout May, residents are being encouraged to give old items, gathering dust or potentially destined for the bin, a new lease of life by visiting their nearest repair cafe, helping them to save money and reduce waste. Councillor Nick Adams-King said, "Hampshire is fortunate to have a high number of repair cafes run by amazing volunteers who use their skills to fix broken items such as electronics, garden equipment, clothing, jewellery and much more. The Big Fix is a campaign to promote the growing number of repair cafes across the United Kingdom, all run by volunteers who teach people how to fix items at home so that fewer items end up as waste."
NHS manager's salary slated. A Hampshire NHS worker has said the county's integrated care board costs more than it helps. After assessing financial data and liaising with staff within the integrated care board, an NHS employee at Hampshire Hospital has shared that the board is costing £60 million in salaries alone. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board, ICB, was introduced in the summer to bring together the seven clinical commissioning groups, CCGs. However, the Hampshire NHS worker, who asked to remain anonymous, claims that it is worsening NHS debt. They said, "From an NHS perspective, we're really struggling financially, even though the government is ploughing thousands in. The ICB acts as a middle management layer, and I've always had the perception that it doesn't really have much value, but costs rather more than helps. We must have one of the largest ICBs despite not having the largest hospitals. They've been a bugbear since they came into existence. I deal with them on almost a daily basis, and they simply forward on emails to other people and have been telling me to do extra work. If you look at all the hospitals in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, we're probably going to be between £60 million to £80 million in deficit. So there is no money to pay nurses and no money left in the system. ICB has published a chart on how much people are getting paid, and it's absolutely ridiculous. With 1,000 in the area working within the ICB, it's costing £60 million for just their salaries. If you didn't have that group in the middle, we'd be breaking even. Ideally, the ICB would be scrapped so we can reinvest the £60 million back into patient care." In response, a spokesperson for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight ICB said, "The organisation is responsible for setting the plan for the local NHS to meet the needs of our population. Those employed by the Integrated Care Board make up 1% of the total NHS and social care workforce. ICB employees include nurses, doctors and other clinical professionals who support frontline patient care. In addition to this, we run services including safeguarding services for people with special education needs and or disability, provide guidance and support on packages of care for adults with ongoing health needs.
Firefighters battle nature reserve blaze. Multiple fire crews attended a fire in Winnell Nature Reserve on Monday, May the 1st. Crews from Winchester, St Mary's, Eastleigh and Alsford were called to the scene at 4:38 p.m. after the fire was reported. The fire was extinguished by the crews using 10 beaters and 2 jets. A stop message came in shortly before 6:30 p.m. with one crew later returning to conduct a reinvestigation and checked for further hotspots. It is not yet known what caused the fire. A Hampshire Fire Service spokesman said the fire is not thought to be suspicious, but a definite cause has not been established. Its statement said, Winchester, St Mary's, Eastleigh and Alsford firefighters were called to Winnell Nature Reserve at 4:38 p.m. on Bank Holiday Monday after a fire broke out, creating a large plume of smoke. The fire, measuring approximately 100 square metres of reeds, was extinguished using 10 beaters and 2 jets. The stop message came in shortly before 6:30 p.m. with one crew returning later in the evening to conduct a re-inspection and check for further hotspots.
Emily's Wall on Wheels is a big draw in the city centre. A School of Art student has collaborated with Trinity Art Group to create a portable mural on the theme of home. The art group, facilitated by PhD researcher Alistair Eales, focuses on community building and inclusion through social practice. Third-year School of Art Winchester student Emily Ralph worked with TAG to gather the thoughts and ideas of the group on what home meant to them. The workshops informed all aspects of the design process, returning agency and inclusion to the Trinity Art Group, which allowed it to share their intangible histories and narratives of homelessness and marginalisation. The creative exchange formed a maxim: home is where the flowers grow, with Emily then constructing a large-scale portable wall on wheels on which she designed a painting by numbers mural. Last Wednesday, she pushed the wall around Winchester City Centre, inviting members of the public to fill in the mural and talk about what home meant to them. She hopes that this unexpected art intervention will raise awareness of the work which Trinity Winchester does, and bring into focus the human face of the people the charity supports. Emily said, "It's been an honour to work with the Trinity Art Group and create a mural on the theme of home. I hope this project raises awareness of the vital work Trinity Winchester does and encourages us to think more deeply about what home means to them as well as us." PhD researcher Alistair Eales added, "We're thrilled that Emily stepped in to work with the TAG for her final major project. Her collaboration with the group has been truly transformative, and we hope this project will positively impact on the community."
Zoo's May Day arrival finding its feet. Guests witnessed a very special moment at Marwell on May Day as one of the zoo's blesbok delivered her calf in full view. The tiny new arrival was born in the blesbok paddock on Monday, May the 1st, shortly after 2:30 p.m. Within minutes, it was finding its feet and making its first wobbly steps, witnessed by guests and a number of fortunate photographers. The young calf can be seen with its parents, Mother Vanessa and Father Blaz, in the blesbok paddock next to the zoo's clouded leopard's enclosure. The sex of the new arrival has not yet been determined, and keepers are yet to choose a name. In the wild, blesbok are native to South Africa, where they graze in herds on open grassland. They travel in single files to lines to watering points, creating paths as they go. Calves are able to follow their mothers within 30 minutes of being born and wean around 4 months of age. Both male and female blesbok have ringed horns with distinctive white faces and brown bodies. In the wild, males use their horns to clash fight to establish their dominance. And there's a definite photograph here of the two adults and the calf standing, looking a little bit wobbly there, but delightful.
MP says ongoing water supply disruption is unacceptable. Hampshire MPs recently visited the Southern Water Facility at Otterbourne after a report was published into the loss of water supply in February and December. Winchester MP Steve Bryan, Romsey MP Caroline Noakes and Eastleigh MP Paul Holmes visited the supply works, which failed, leaving thousands of homes without water. Bottled water stations were set up at the Aegis Bowl and several other locations to keep householders supplied from February the 15th to the 19th. It was a similar story just before Christmas. Many homes in North Southampton again lost water early last week. Southern Water said its system shut down after they detected that untreated water was not being filtered properly. The fault resulted in a lengthy clean-up operation. The report published on April the 28th said that it was due to a water quality shutdown and that they are investing £350 million to improve the resilience of the site. Mr. Bryan said, "The water supply issues that hit us just before Christmas were bad enough, but although for very different reasons, the loss of supply in February half-term infuriated us all. It was totally unacceptable. We promised to hold Southern Water to account for that, and our visit to Otterbourne took place within hours of the incident report being finalised. Southern Waters have taken steps, albeit with an impact on the pace of the Otterbourne site improvement works, to minimise the chances of a repeat, but they know they're being watched like hawks by all of us. The imminent report from the Independent Drinking Water Inspectorate will be the next part of that." Tim McMahon, Southern Water's director, said, "We are very sorry to those who were impacted by the disruption. We have carried out a thorough internal review into what happened in order to prevent it happening in the future. It is important we are transparent with customers when we fall short of expectations. February's incident was a case of human error, and there are important lessons to be learned. The report has made a number of recommendations, and I'd like to reassure our Hampshire communities that we are already taking action. We are also investing around £350 million over 8 years at Otterbourne to improve the resilience of our site. In recognition of the distress caused by this incident, particularly as it came only 2 months after a separate loss of water in the same area, we doubled our guaranteed standards of service."
Vandal Stall Park opening. A Kingsworthy play park has been unable to open in time for the coronation due to vandalism. The Eversley Park Playground, located at Eversley Park Recreation Ground on Loder Close, was scheduled to be opened in early May following refurbishment. Kingsworthy Parish Council planned to be open to members of the public last Friday, May the 5th, in time for the coronation. But the council later announced on Facebook that the park will remain closed for the time being due to a combination of issues, including vandalism on some of the site's fencing. A revised opening time has not been given. In a statement published online, the Parish Council said, "The Kingsworthy Parish Council are deeply disappointed. The play area is now unable to open in time for King Charles III coronation weekend. There are outstanding points that require resolution prior to the opening of the play area. During the inspection of the park, some snagging issues were identified and remedial works will need to be carried out. Unfortunately, also the site fencing was vandalised on Wednesday night, and we need to confirm that no damage was done, which may require further safety checks to be carried out. We are awaiting planning permission for the installation of the main tower, and the tower is in storage as we await a resolution. Due to variables outside the parish council's control, we cannot provide an estimated time for completion and the revised opening date at this time."
Resurfacing work on City Footway to take 16 weeks. Winchester City Council has announced the first phase of a footway resurfacing scheme to be undertaken by Hampshire Highways. The work, which is taking place as part of Project Resilience, will see resurfacing work done on the eastern side of Chilbolton Avenue from Stockbridge Road to Romsey Road. The work was scheduled to start on Tuesday, May the 9th, and is expected to take approximately 16 weeks to complete. During the works, the footpath will be closed in short sections to pedestrians. The City Council has announced that in order to undertake the work safely, for the majority of the works, it will be necessary to use temporary traffic lights between the hours of 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. each day. During the school holiday periods, these hours will not be restricted. More information on the roadworks occurring across Hampshire can be found by visiting the Hampshire County Council website.
University buys office block from City Council. Hampshire City Council has agreed to the sale of a four-storey office building on Andover Road. Capital House has been sold to the University of Southampton after being unoccupied for several months. The building has seen a variety of uses, including acting as a temporary library while work was being carried out at Winchester Discovery Centre in 2007. The sale of the building comes following the council's decision that it is no longer required. The site has been purchased by the university for an undisclosed sum, with an aim to invest in the Winchester School of Art. The building will provide additional space for the school to enable the refurbishment of existing buildings. Leader of the Hampshire County Council, Councillor Rob Humby, said, "We have always carefully monitored the use of our offices to ensure they remain cost-effective and to release savings whenever possible. We are also mindful of our role in the local economy and the needs of local residents and our partners. Capital House has been unoccupied in recent months, and following considered review, we have determined that we no longer need it. I am very pleased that the University of Southampton has come forward to give it a new purpose that will help continue to drive our local economy." A university spokesman said, "The University of Southampton has an immediate need for space as we consider improvements to our current Winchester School of Arts site. The purchase of Capital House enables that extra capacity for teaching and learning space, whilst also allowing for swing space within walking distance from the WSA campus." Hampshire County Council has been reviewing its office accommodation in Winchester more widely following the COVID-19 pandemic. It is currently in the process of considering whether further buildings might be identified for lease or sale. Councillor Humby said, "We are currently looking forward at what may be possible, balancing the opportunity for savings with the need to support the local economy and avoiding disruption to public services. I look forward to further modernisation and streamlining of our operations."
Shakespeare sessions. Pupils have been visiting Winchester College to learn more about the Bard. Winchester College has hosted a series of enrichment sessions on Shakespeare for pupils from Hampshire State Schools. Pupils from Park Community School and Everest Community Academy recently visited the college for the sessions. The visit began with a drama workshop in the Queen Elizabeth II Theatre, led by the English and Drama Departments, where the pupils ran through scenes of Macbeth and discussed the themes and topics of the text. Following the workshop was a lesson in the Treasury Museum, where they examined a silver ewer and basin, which was given to the college in 1563. They also examined Winchester College's account book from 1563, which lists the food and drink consumed by the school community for that year, including large quantities of grain, hops and malt for making bread and beer, as well as various livestock for feasts. The second half of the afternoon was spent with an edition of Shakespeare's first folio, as well as other work by his contemporaries. To end the day, the pupils attended a lecture from Professor Emma Smith on the importance of the first folio. She talked about its significance in the evolution of the English language, as well as our understanding of the playwright and his contemporaries.
Campaigners set to fight M3 scheme. Road campaigners will start their battle against a huge road scheme near Winchester next week. A new group, Winchester Together for the Planet, will speak at the pre-examination hearing of the £150 million plans for a revamp of Junction 9 of the M3 at Winnall. As previously reported, National Highways plans to alter the junction, removing the need for traffic switching between the M3 and A34 to use the roundabout. The M3 will be widened to a four-lane motorway with new connector roads and slip roads. National Highways is seeking a development consent order, and the examination is part of that process. Winchester Together for the Planet comprises WINAC, Winchester Friends of the Earth, XR Winchester, Environmental Alliance Project, and the Climate and Ecology Bill Alliance, Zero Hour, have joined forces with 20s Plenty to oppose the plans. The examination will be held at the Wessex Hotel on Paternoster Row on Wednesday, May the 17th, starting at 10 a.m. The meeting will explain the process and the timetable of the examination. In a statement, the group said they had concerns about the process. "We welcome the examiner's choice of issues for examination, but worry about the detail and emphasis. The biggest worry is that the greenhouse gas emissions caused by the scheme may not be tested in a sufficiently rigorous way. The examiners seem mostly concerned with how climate change will affect the scheme rather than how far the scheme will accelerate global heating. There is nothing so far to suggest that the examiners will probe the conclusion by National Highways that the carbon emissions of each scheme in its overall road programme is small compared with the UK's total carbon emissions and is therefore negligible, even though the combined impact of all current road schemes will be considerable and could threaten the government's zero, net zero strategy." Phil Gagg, speaking for the WINAC Transport Group, said, "So far there has been a complete failure to explore sufficiently alternative, more cost-effective ways of reducing congestion, e.g. invest in better train services, electrify freight railways to the Midlands and the North." Newly elected City Councillor Hannah Greenberg, leader of the 20s Plenty for Hampshire campaign, said the environmental, human health and mental distress impacts of existing heavy traffic on the communities of Twyford and Coldon Common are already insufferable. This scheme will only lead to even greater levels of traffic on the B3335.
Hundreds attend coronation service. Hundreds of residents attended a special coronation service held at Winchester Cathedral. Among those attending included Winchester MP Steve Bryan, along Mearn Valley MP Flip Drummond and Fareham MP Suella Braverman. The service was specially designed to have many echoes of the last coronation to be held in Winchester Cathedral for Edward the Confessor in 1043. It included a sermon from the Reverend Canon Professor Vernon White, former canon at Winchester Cathedral. Mr. Bryan said, "I have never seen our great cathedral looking so wonderful." This was a very happy occasion ahead of the big day when we crown our new King Charles III. The order of service was so well put together by Dean Catherine and her team, who deserve great credit. Everyone loved the references to an explanation of the aspects that would have featured in 1043 and which we will see in the Westminster Abbey service for Charles. We all enjoyed the reference in the sermon to the important role Winchester has played in the coronation of our monarchs going back 1,000 years. I'm sure we'd be up for hosting the next one for William. More than 200 people rang church bells across the district to mark the King's coronation, following a push for more people to learn how to ring. Bell ringers started their recruitment drive for people to take part in the special coronation ringing 3 months ago. In that time, 40 people who had never rung before, learned the art and joined experienced ringers in 47 performances in churches across Winchester, Romsey, Stockbridge and other neighbouring parishes. In Easton, 30 ringers from Abingdon, Sheraton, Old and New Oldsford, Kingsworthy and Winchester Cathedral met together for tea and cake in the afternoon after ringing at several other towers in the morning, and before going on to ring at Kingsworthy, Abingdon, Northington and Brown Candover. Over the weekend, bells were rung in almost every ringable tower in the Winchester district, with around 230 people taking part. Coordinator Roger Booth, 67, said, "It went very well. All the new ringers were extremely pleased. It's not just the pleasure of ringing bells, but the community reaction, and it was really special that so many people wanted to spread the word."
Now for a rather different music event. Music festival set to be out of this world. A popular music festival is set to return to near Winchester, and this year promises to be out of this world. Vicarage Farm at Woodmancote will host the Mucky Weekenders Festival on Friday, September the 8th and Saturday, September the 9th. Barry Ashworth, who is the lead DJ in the Dub Pistols, organises the Mucky Weekender Festival. This will be the fourth such festival the Dub Pistols have done. The lineup for this 2023 festival includes Woody Cook, Stereo MCs and special guest Goldie. Barry said, "The Mucky Weekender Festival is a place where you can go on your own and leave with 1,000 mates. It's a real community vibe." The Mucky Weekenders Festival this year has a new outer space theme to go with some of the stages in the festival. Barry said, "Last year the theme was the good, the bad and the ugly, and therefore very Western. This year we are going for an out-of-space theme with spaceship and space-themed stages. Giant crystals are being installed and tons of lasers will create the sense of a real trip around space." Barry was the founder of the Dub Pistols in 1996, and 2 years later they released their first studio album. Now, 25 years on, they're still going strong with their 9th album and 4th Mucky Weekender Festival. Barry started out as a club promoter and DJ when he went over to Ibiza, where he organised 2 club nights, Monkey Drum and Naked Lunch. He then went on as a DJ, collaborating with people like Limp Bizkit, Moby and Filter, until he started the Dub Pistols. Point Blank was the Dub Pistols' first ever album as a group in 1998. And subsequently, they've made 9 studio albums and collaborated on movie soundtracks, Blade 2, Bad Company and The Mystery Men. Barry has also done a lot of work for mental health in music, with a programme called Tonic Rider that promotes good mental health in the music industry. And in 2021, he did his 3rd annual Wing Walk to raise money for this cause.
Dark Side of Constable at New Art Exhibition. Winchester ARC has announced a new exhibition on the works of John Constable coming to the gallery. Constable, The Dark Side will showcase several paintings by the 19th century romantic artist, including Weymouth Bay, 1816, and A Sluice, perhaps on the Stour, watercolour, 1830 to 1836. This new and unique exhibition has been specially curated for Hampshire Cultural Trust by art historian Nicola Morby, and will only be available to view at the ARC from May 26th to August the 16th. The exhibition will explore Constable's obsession with the contrast between light and dark in nature, and the way he placed that at the heart of his exploration of landscape. It was through the interplay of light and shadow that Constable believed he could capture the movement, vitality and variety of the natural world, and importantly, convey and evoke emotion. Alongside Constable, The Dark Side, the first solo exhibition by artist, actor and co-founder of the Murray Parish Trust, James Murray, is opening at the ARC on May the 30th. The abstract works, collectively titled In Flow, are a response to Constable's works and celebrate painting as a medium. The flow will take over the city space on the Arc's mezzanine floor until June 25th.
Wine festival to put the sparkle in summer. The Vineyards of Hampshire, VOH FizzFest, is returning for its ninth year in July. Wine lovers will be able to join 10 of Hampshire's premier vineyards on July the 23rd from 12 noon to 4:30 p.m. FizzFest is the VOH flagship event taking place this year at England's oldest commercial vineyard, Hambledon Vineyard. More than 25 different sparkling and still wines will be available to guests to sample and purchase. The event will be opened by the Hampshire Hawks ladies cricket team and will be sponsored by NFU Wickham and Winchester, DeMarlow & Co, Harwoods and Martin & Company. Tickets are now available for admission and tasting, as well as tutored vineyard tours and masterclasses such as wine and food pairing with Erica Dent of Enjoy Discovering Wine, Rydal Wine Glass Experience with Brand Ambassador Martin Turner, or a Chardonnay class with Katrina Smith from Tipple Talk. Guests will be able to taste the latest vintages in the dedicated tasting tent, enjoy a chilled glass of sparkling in the Fizz Bar, listen to the live music from award-winning jazz vocalist Amy Baker, and absorb the atmosphere whilst eating food from Hampshire Street food stalls. Ian Kellett, owner of Hambledon Vineyard, said, "We are delighted to be hosting Vineyards of Hampshire annual Fizz Fest here at Hambledon Vineyard, Hambledon. We look forward to seeing old friends and welcoming all wine lovers to taste a range of sparkling and still wines in our historic setting." Established in 1952, Hambledon is the UK's oldest commercial vineyard. The current owners, Ian and Anna Kellett, purchased the estate in the late 1990s and replanted it with various clones of the classic champagne varieties of Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Meunier. Today the estate has more than 200 acres under vine. Vineyards of Hampshire comprises of Black Chalk, Cottonworth, Danebury Vineyards, Exton Park, The Grange, Hambledon, Hattingley, Louis Pomeroy, England, Quab Park Estate and Rames. Admission will cost £35 per person and include wine tastings, while access to the masterclasses and tours will cost £25 per person and £12 per person respectively.
New mayoress leaving local politics on a high, and there's a picture of Teresa Evans, who is retiring after 28 years service, and she's with Councillor Angela Clear, and they appear to have been planting a tree. Teresa Evans has retired after 28 years service earlier this month, but is set for a comeback of a sort by becoming the mayoress for the next municipal year. The city councillor was first elected for the Wickham ward in 1995 and has served continuously ever since, for many years as chairman of the planning committee. She has also served on environmental health, standards and the planning committee of the South Downs National Park. She is set to become the mayoress for the new mayor, Angela Clear, when she is elected at the annual council meeting on Wednesday, May the 17th. Mrs. Evans, aged 76, will accompany Councillor Clear to events over the next 12 months. She was herself mayor in the 2001 to 2002 year and served on Wickham Parish Council for 21 years until 2 years ago. Mrs. Evans, a former language teacher, said she has enjoyed her time on the council, but added, "I had no idea of the amount of extra work that was involved. It's a heavy load of casework and chairing committees." The rise of social media has seen increased criticism of councillors. She said it got very bad in COVID when people didn't have much to do. Once COVID was lifted, we haven't had the number of complaints as when people were stuck at home. "When you chair something, it is difficult to please everybody. You have to take the line of what is best for that community. Maintaining quality is very important. Decisions set precedence for the rest of the district. If you allow a house in the countryside, other developers will say, well, you allowed that there. Boosting biodiversity was an important issue for her. Whilst on planning, pressing for swift boxes and better access for hedgehogs through gardens. Retiring after 28 years public service will take getting used to. It's going to be tough to give it all up. I will probably enjoy having more time. I'm not a person to do nothing, and no doubt something will come along.
Backpacker in Thai party drug tragedy. A fiercely independent 18-year-old Winchester woman died after taking ecstasy while backpacking in Thailand, an inquest heard. Eleanor Yates of Sarum Close was found dead in her bunk bed in the Koh Phanang district on February the 19th last year. The inquest, held at Portsmouth Coroner's Court on May the 4th, heard that she had been travelling extensively in her gap year. Her plan was to go to the University of Bristol to study film. The 18-year-old had attended a full moon party on February the 17th. The inquest heard that she had taken an ecstasy tablet, also known as MDMA. However, she was found dead at 9 a.m. on February the 19th. The inquest heard that a post-mortem by consultant pathologist Dr. Adnam Al-Badri found the cause of death to be cardiac arrest due to MDMA toxicity. Area coroner Jason Pegg read a statement provided by Melissa Damsgaard, who had been travelling with Miss Yates. The statement said, on February the 17th, six of us in total went to the beach for a full moon party. We had great time dancing together. I went back to the dormitory at around 11. Eleanor came back about 2 hours later. She said she had bought a hard drug from a woman at the party. The inquest heard that Ms. Damsgaard found that she had died. John Yates paid tribute to his daughter. Initially, Eleanor was averse to travelling. We moved to India when she was 9, and she kicked and screamed when we went somewhere exotic on holiday. But she became more confident traveller as time went on. She had 50 stamps on her passport. She had saved up for her gap year for 3 years working at Sainsbury's. However, the drugs she was doing while at college were a shock to us. Mr. Yates told the inquest that his daughter had spent about 2.5 months travelling in Europe before moving on to Thailand. He said she was living her dream. She was fiercely independent. Concluding, Mr. Pegg said, based on the evidence, I am satisfied that the MDMA was taken by her. However, the exact time cannot be ascertained. The cause of death is misadventure. She intentionally took the drug, but the consequence was unintended.
Care Home celebrates National Gardening Week. Residents at Shawford Springs Care Home in Compton celebrated National Gardening Week from May the 1st to the 7th. Ever since it was first celebrated in 2012, National Gardening Week has grown in popularity. The week raises awareness of the difference gardens and gardening can make to everyone's lives and helps to inspire people. The theme for this year's National Gardening Week was to celebrate His Majesty's King Charles III and his love of horticulture and the environment. Residents took part to create colourful raised beds with red, white and blue themes to decorate the home, ready for the coronation. It was also the ideal time to launch Shawford Springs Gardening Club. The next project will be to plant some seasonal vegetables. Julie House, General Manager at Shawford Springs, said, "Our garden is a much-loved space. Residents really enjoy looking after the plants and flowers, watching them grow and change through the seasons. May is such a fantastic time to be outside enjoying the garden. Many of our flowers are coming into bloom now, so we all had great fun creating our colourful containers for the coronation. Seeing all of the trees in blossom is such a tonic for all of us too." And there's a picture of 4 residents admiring their work on the raised beds.
Longer opening hours for Mottisfont Abbey. National Trust property Mottisfont Abbey, which is home to the national collection of pre-1900 old-fashioned roses, which reached their peak in early summer, is offering extended opening hours. Unlike modern species, old-fashioned roses tend to flower just once a year, so their blooming season is an annual sight attracting thousands of visitors. And Mottisfont offers extended opening hours on some evenings during June, so you can enjoy the flowers and their perfume. Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays, between June the 1st and June the 30th, the gardens will be open until 8 o'clock in the evening, and sometimes there'll be live jazz as well. The new head gardener says, "I'm waiting really eagerly for the gardens to reveal their array of colours and bouquets. The team have meticulously pruned and tied in 500 roses and nurtured their progress through a year of challenging weather conditions. So we look forward to welcoming all visitors in sharing our enjoyment of the sensory experience. I feel early mornings and evenings offer the most captivating times, so I encourage you to come in the late opening times."
I'm afraid that concludes the extract for the week ending 12th of May. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And thanks to today's readers, Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boydham.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening, and I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.